Today I'm actually going to be talking about some work that I did with Bill Snyder when I was at Washington State University. It's not what I initially intended to talk about, but I did a little bit of procrastinating. But I think it should still fit under the title here, so don't worry. There will be natural enemies. So kind of a big question that's been sort of hanging out there, taunting entomologists and sort of ecologists in general, is just why are there so many species out there? And some of the early ecological models suggested that it's relatively intense intra-specific competition coupled with relatively weak inter-specific competition that fosters species coexistence and promotes this biodiversity. And then sort of an extension of this is a prediction then that if species partition their resource use, then you would predict that adding more species to a community would enhance overall resource exploitation. So the general prediction then is that in a community dominated by generalist consumers, which are capable of consuming all resources, in this case, increasing consumer richness is not predicted to impact resource consumption. So if we look at the pool of susceptible resources here with generalist consumers, the pool of susceptible resources remains constant and is just divided up into smaller and smaller pieces as consumer species richness goes up. So these generalist consumers are predicted to be redundant due to this resource use overlap. On the other hand, if you look at a community dominated by specialist consumers, where each consumer prefers to attack a different resource, in this case, resource partitioning would be complete, and so you'd predict an overall increase in resource consumption with an increase in consumer species richness. So in this case, the pool of susceptible resources actually increases as consumer species richness goes up. So where you have more consumer species present, you get more effective use of the available resources, and that results in this positive relationship between diversity and resource consumption. So that same type of positive relationship between consumer diversity and resource consumption is the goal of conservation biological control programs, where you try to enhance suppression of prey populations by promoting enemy biodiversity. So hopefully seeing an overall increase in pest suppression with an increase in enemy diversity. And as John mentioned earlier, this natural pest suppression is a really valuable ecosystem service provided by these natural enemies. So the question then becomes, is this expectation of a positive relationship here a reasonable expectation? So a meta-analysis by Brad Cardinale and Diane and others came out recently, and they looked at the effect of increasing species richness across a variety of systems, across a variety of trophic levels, the impacts of increasing that species richness on a variety of different ecosystem functions. And they found a general overall pattern of increasing ecosystem function with an increase in species richness. So the general overall pattern is for a positive relationship, but people still debate exactly what the mechanism is that's going on here, especially given the fact that there is a lot of diversity or variation among studies. And also, we don't really know yet what the role of resource partitioning, if any, might be in contributing to this positive relationship. And that's because it's been difficult to explicitly test the effects of resource partitioning within these systems. And that's because resource use by particular species is typically confounded with other species-specific traits, so things like development time or fecundity. So you can't isolate the effects of a species resource use from that species identity. So using a multi-parasitoid, multi-host system, we were able to get around some of this difficulty and actually assess the impacts of resource partitioning independent of species identity. And we did this by taking advantage of this natural host fidelity that's exhibited by these parasitoids that would otherwise be generalist parasitoid wasps. So the way this works is that adult parasitoids, upon emergence from their host, will sample the chemical cues in their immediate surroundings, and then they use those chemicals to guide their own search for hosts. And so since most of those chemicals in that immediate surrounding, or many of those chemicals, are going to be associated with the host species itself, these parasitoids tend to locate and oviposit within hosts of the same species from which they themselves emerged. So they exhibit this natal host fidelity. And because of this natal host fidelity, we were able to manipulate the resource use preferences of individuals within a species simply by rearing colonies of these parasitoids on different species of aphid hosts. And that enabled us to manipulate resource use preferences or resource partitioning independent of species identity. And I'm going to talk about that in a little bit more detail a little bit later. So we did this work using radishes as kind of a model system. Radishes in the Pacific Northwest are attacked by a whole variety of aphids, including green peach aphids, cabbage aphids, and turnip aphids. And then there are an assortment of parasitoids in this system, and all of these parasitoids had been documented as attacking all three of these aphid species in natural populations around the Pacific Northwest. These parasitoids include Aphidias matricari, Diarrhoetelli rapi, and Aphidias colmani. And I know that these species, these pictures don't necessarily match up with the species name, but just pretend. So it's the whole getting the pictures off the internet thing. Yeah, and don't sue me either. So, so to manipulate a species resource use, what we did was we reared different colonies of each parasitoid species on different species of aphids. So each of these smaller boxes here represents a parasitoid colony that we reared. The colored box around the picture represents the aphid host species on which that colony was maintained. So the yellow boxes indicate green peach aphids, the blue boxes are cabbage aphids, and the brown boxes are turnip aphids. So we had three colonies of Aphidias matricari, one on each aphid, and then we did the same for D. rapi and Aphidias colmani. So there was a total of nine different parasitoid colonies. So then we just simply went in and took individuals from these different colonies and mixed and matched them to create our different treatment combinations. The study was done in field cages. Every cage had nine different radish plants, and we released all three aphid species into every cage, so we didn't manipulate aphid diversity. And then we had one of four different parasitoid treatments that were released. And the parasitoid treatments were a cross between parasitoid species richness, so we had either one species present or three species present, and also parasitoid resource use. So they were specialist parasitoids which completely partitioned their resource use so that each parasitoid preferred to attack a different aphid species. Or they were generalist parasitoids with completely overlapping resource use. So for this first treatment where we had a single parasitoid present that was a specialist on a particular aphid species, there were nine possible species combinations of this treatment. And these are the nine possible combinations. We had each parasitoid species reared on each aphid species. So colmani, matricari, and rapi, each reared from green peach aphids, cabbage aphids, or turnip aphids. So there were a total of nine different species combinations, and each of these combinations represented a replicate of our treatment, which was a single specialist parasitoid. And we did it this way so that our treatment wouldn't be confounded with the identity of any one parasitoid species or any one aphid species or any one parasitoid aphid combination. For the second treatment, which was a high diversity treatment where each parasitoid preferred to attack a different resource, here there were six possible combinations, and it was just every possible combination where all three parasitoid species were present, but each was reared from a different aphid host. For a single generalist parasitoid, there were three possible combinations. So it was each parasitoid species present alone, so a single species is present, but in order to create a generalist parasitoid that was capable of attacking all resources, we had individuals present which were reared from each of the three different aphid species. So even though an individual parasitoid might prefer to attack the particular aphid host from which it itself emerged, as a population, each of these species is generalist and can attack a broad range of resources. And then finally, to create a single generalist parasitoid, a high diversity parasitoid treatment where generalist parasitoids were present, there was only a single possible combination. So we just replicated that one combination 6 times. And this is where all species were present simultaneously and reared from all aphids. So we had all parasitoids present and capable of attacking all of the different aphid species. So again, we ran this experiment out in the field in these large 2 by 2 by 2 meter field cages. We did this work at the Washington State University Potato Research Farm in Othello, Washington. Again, we released all 3 aphid species into every cage, so we weren't manipulating the diversity of the resource, only the diversity of the consumer. And we maintained total parasitoid density constant across treatments, so even though we were manipulating richness, overall density of parasitoids was held constant at 36. And then we went in throughout the study and conducted visual observations of aphid abundance, and also we counted mummies to get rates of parasitism. And the experiment ran for 28 days, which corresponded to 2 parasitoid generations. So what did we find? Well, first, we have to take a look at parasitoid host fidelity to convince ourselves that these parasitoids were actually showing fidelity to their natal hosts, which would tell us that our treatment manipulations actually worked. So here we see percent parasitism of each of the 3 aphid species split out, so individually. So there's parasitism of cabbage aphids, turnip aphids, and green peach aphids. And it's parasitism in the presence of at least some parasitoids for which that aphid was the natal host, as compared to parasitism when none of the parasitoids present were reared from that natal host. So parasitoids are present in all cases here. It's just that in some of these cases, there were some parasitoids in that treatment that were reared from that host, whereas not so in the other case. So if fidelity were 100%, then what you would predict then would be that parasitism would be 0 in the absence of any parasitoids reared from that host, and significant in the presence of parasitoids that emerged from that host. So what we found was that all 3 of the aphid species responded similarly, so there wasn't an interaction with aphid species. So, and overall, we saw significantly greater parasitism in the presence of parasitoids that emerged from that host than in the absence. So what this tells us is that these parasitoids actually were exhibiting natal host fidelity. But that fidelity wasn't necessarily 100%, since you do see some parasitism in the absence of parasitoids reared from those hosts. But the fact that we did see fidelity to some extent gave us confidence that our treatments did work, and that we could go ahead then and ask how resource partitioning influences that relationship between parasitoid diversity and resource consumption. So what we have here is total percent parasitism for, in this case, all 3 of the aphid species combined. So we're combining aphids in this case. So you're looking at the impact of increasing species richness on total percent parasitism when specialists are present, as compared to the effect of increasing species richness from 1 to 3 on percent parasitism when generalists were present. And we found that there was a significant interaction between the two. So increasing the diversity of generalist parasitoids did not impact parasitism rates. So this line, the slope of this line, is not different from 0, indicating that resource use overlap results in redundancy. But when we increase the diversity of specialist parasitoids, which each prefer to attack a different resource, in this case we got significantly greater rates of parasitism in the high diversity treatment. So this is interesting though, because in both of these cases we have the exact same parasitoid species present. The only difference is that in the one case where you see a positive effect of diversity, these parasitoids were reared on different aphid hosts. So this really highlights the importance of resource partitioning. So these are the effects on percent parasitism, which pretty much correspond to, like, say, prey consumption, but then were there impacts then on the aphids as a population? So were there impacts on aphid abundance? And what we found were that rates of parasitism pretty much did a pretty good job of corresponding with impacts on aphid abundance. Once again, with when generalist parasitoids were present, we saw no change in aphid abundance with an increase in diversity. So this slope is not significantly different from zero. However, increasing the diversity of specialist parasitoids, which you see here, resulted in overall greater prey suppression, so a significant decline in overall aphid abundance, with the greatest level of prey suppression happening when you have a community of consumers that is both species rich and also partition their resources, which you see here. Too many buttons. Okay. So just to summarize, we were able to isolate, in this case, the effects of resource partitioning from the effects of species identity, which enabled us to look at this role of resource partitioning in determining how the relationship between consumer diversity and resource consumption. And we found that it really is kind of a complex interaction between resource partitioning and species richness, which results in the changes that we see in prey consumption. So, and this interaction results here for generalists. Increasing richness has no effect on their prey consumption, and again on their impacts on the aphid as a population. But for specialist parasitoids, increasing their richness significantly enhances parasitism rates or prey consumption, and that effect then results in an overall decline in aphid abundance. So here, if you look here, with species richness held constant, then pretty much the major difference, the key difference between these two treatments is just that intra-specific competition is relatively stronger and inter-specific competition is relatively weaker. Whoops. When you have a diverse community of specialists as compared to a diverse community of generalists. And this pretty much fits those early ecological models that I mentioned. So just to conclude then, we pretty much found that it's resource partitioning and not really biodiversity per se that's leading to this positive relationship between diversity and resource consumption, at least in some cases. And so what we would suggest then is that it would be more the conservation of enemies, natural enemies, which fulfill unique functional roles that would really help to conserve or preserve or enhance this valuable ecosystem service of natural pest suppression. And I just wanted to acknowledge the lab at WSU and our funding sources. And I'd be happy to take any questions. Oh, I have time for one. Mark?
It looks like the increase in percent parasitism was synergistic rather than additive. It went from 3% to something like 18%. Do you have any ideas why that might be? When you go from one species to three, why would it multiply by a number of six rather than simply?
Some of that we think is that there are The problem is that we don't know the mechanisms behind, the exact mechanisms behind the response, and that's the problem, so I can't really say. But obviously there are some sort of interactions that may be, it may be different interactions that are influencing the intraspecific effects than that are influencing the interspecific effects. And we have some evidence to suggest that some of those intraspecific effects might be happening at a different spatial scale than the inter effects. And so that as you're changing the relative abundance of those two, you may be, you know, getting an enhanced effect of one versus the other.